of the West when it comes to it. But that's, of course, the development of a real explicit alliance between these three countries would be something that the United States would find very dangerous. And, you know, again, we're in a situation where it's the logic of what we're seeing, but it's a dangerous logic.
Thank you for that, Jim Kavanaugh, political analyst and blogger from New York. Don DeBar, activist and commentator from Austin, New York. Thank you. With that, we come to an end of this edition of The Spotlight. From Mika Batapwe and the team, it's goodbye.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details. Next, you will hear recitation of verse 21 of chapter Ibrahim from the Holy Quran, recited by Mr. Reza Young.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Wa barazu lillahi jami'an faqala ضعفاء للذين استكبروا إنا كنا لكم تبعا إنا كنا لكم تبعا فهل أن مغنون عنا من عذاب الله من شيء قالوا
علينا أجزعنا أم صبرنا.
صبرنا سواء علينا أجزعنا أم صبرنا ما لنا من محيص صدق الله العلي العظيم.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. And they shall all come forth before Allah. Then the weak shall say to those who were proud, "Surely we were your followers. Can you therefore avert from us any part of the chastisement of Allah?" They would say, "If Allah had guided us, we too would have guided you. It is the same to us whether we are impatient now or patient. There is no place for us to fly to."
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Iran blames Israel for the recent terrorist attack on a defense facility in Isfahan, saying it reserves the right to respond to such actions. Israeli aircraft carry out new strikes on central Gaza Strip. That is, Palestinian resistance groups respond with powerful anti-aircraft fire. And also in our headlines, calls are growing for accountability and an end to U.S. police brutality as a funeral service is held for a black man recently killed by Memphis police. Hello and welcome, everybody. Here in the Iranian capital, Tehran, this is World News. Our top story for this half hour, Iran's ambassador to the UN says a preliminary investigation shows Israel was responsible for Saturday's terrorist attack on a military site in the central Iranian city of Isfahan. Saidi Ravani also pointed out Israeli Prime Minister's recent interview with U.S. media in which he admitted to, quote, taking action against certain weapons development sites in Iran. Iravani called Israel's assault a brazen violation of international law and urged the UN Security Council to hold the regime accountable. The Iranian diplomat stressed that his country reserves a right to defend its national security and respond to any aggression or threats by Israel. Iravani also condemned as provocative and irresponsible a tweet by Ukraine's presidential advisor on the drone attack, in which he alleged Iran for providing weapons to Russia. This is while Tehran has repeatedly denied giving weapons to Moscow to be used in the Ukraine war. Iran and Nicaragua have signed a memorandum of understanding for cooperation and political consultations as Tehran looks forward to boost ties with Latin American countries. Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdullahian, signed the document during his visit to Managua. Speaking at the Nicaraguan foreign ministry, Amir Abdullahian called Latin America one of the main pillars of Tehran's foreign policy. He said Iran-Nicaragua relations are expanding at a fast pace. The top Nicaraguan diplomat, for his part, said boosting relations are in the interests of both countries. He also stressed that Managua and Tehran remain committed to peace and to defend their rights of their citizens. Iran and Nicaragua signed 14 documents on comprehensive cooperation last year. Iranians are celebrating the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution that led to the ouster of the U.S.-backed Pahlavi regime. The celebration, starting on February the 1st, coincide with the return of late Imam Khomeini from several years of exile in 1979 and culminate in nationwide rallies 10 days later. Yusuf Misha Ahmadi has more.
The 44th anniversary of the late Imam Khomeini's return to Iran from several years of exile, marking the beginning of 10 days of celebrations. In Iran, festivities have begun, with Iranians from all walks of life gathering in the mausoleum of Imam Khomeini to renew their pledge of allegiance to the late founder of the Islamic Revolution, while a special ceremony is also underway, demonstrating that the divide-and-rule policy of the enemies of the Islamic Revolution has failed.
I've come here to renew my pledge of allegiance with Imam Khomeini, who was an advocate of social justice and at the forefront of fighting oppressors worldwide.
Assyrians have been living in Iran for more than 3,000 years. This shows that no matter what our enemies do, we will remain united as a nation.
Over the past 44 years, we have managed to overcome many obstacles simply because we remain united, and it's important for our nation to remain that way.
A point that was also raised by the keynote speaker of the ceremony, Parliament Speaker Mohammad Baqir Ghalibaf.
The Islamic Revolution is known worldwide with the name of Imam Khomeini, a great man known for fighting imperialism who always invited the nation to be united in the face of our enemies' plots and said, you know, you're walking down the right path when your enemies do everything they can to stop you. If your enemies are ever indifferent, it is a clear sign that we have deviated from the right path. So their increased animosity is actually a good sign.
That is why the presence of masses at the mausoleum this year is more significant than previous years, considering a period of foreign-backed riots in the country and Western countries increasing political pressure on Iran to unprecedented levels.
We are here to say that we are proud of our revolution and our country.
When Imam Khomeini needed our support to topple the Pahlavi regime, my sons did not hesitate.
I am here to say that I will always support the leader and the Islamic revolution.
My son gave his life for this revolution, and I am here to uphold his values.
Iranians are celebrating the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution at a time when they've managed to thwart foreign-backed riots in the country and bring peace and calm back to all the cities across Iran. More than anything, the 44th anniversary of the victory of the Islamic Revolution is a show of solidarity. Gisumisha Ahmadi, Tehran.
The 1979 Islamic Revolution was meant to fulfill long-cherished desire of independence for Iranians who had suffered decades of subjugation and domination by a monarchical rule with its nexus with some foreign powers. And one of the revolution's main promises was to keep the country away from all forms of dependence, either on the West or the East. The following report gives you an insight into the accomplishment of the Islamic Revolution and how it transformed Iranian society.
Neither East nor West, Islamic Republic. This famous slogan summarizes Iran's 1979 Islamic Revolution and the people's fervent opposition to Cold War rivals, the United States and the Soviet Union, the two powers that then polarized the world sharply along the East-West divide. The slogan, which later became the Iranian foreign policy motto, was inspired by the ideas of Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, who blamed the two powers for many problems faced by Iran and the Islamic world. He believed Muslims should reject the influence of both capitalism and communism. At the onset of the Islamic Revolution, many Iranians were tired of exploitation that culminated into Iran's losing big chunks of its territory to other countries. Therefore, the revolution kindled their hopes of independence and liberty. Iran's occupation by British and Russian empires in two world wars and the country's economic exploitation, directly or indirectly, were still fresh in the collective memory of Iranians. Also etched into people's psyche was how the U.S. and Britain engrossed their democratic aspirations in 1953 by orchestrating a coup against a popular government and returning the autocratic Shah to the throne. That coup consolidated the West's holistic agenda over Iran for a quarter of a century. In the 1970s, the Pahlavi regime was cheered by then-U.S. President Richard Nixon as one of, quote, America's cops on the beat in the Middle East for helping steer the oil-rich region away from the Soviet influence. In those days, the Pahlavi regime even obeyed the U.S. request to support its much-criticized war in Vietnam, sending warplanes, hosting American forces, and refueling warplanes. Henry Kissinger, the U.S. Secretary of State under Nixon, admitted following the 1979 revolution that the Shah never failed to stand by the U.S. He described him as a man whom seven American presidents had lauded as a loyal ally. It was certainly a big blow for Washington to see the Shah ousted. The newly established Islamic Republic viewed both the U.S. and the Soviet Union as miscellaneous forces in international politics. The U.S. was referred to as the Great Satan, since it was the main backer of the Shah and posed the most immediate danger to the revolution. And the Soviet Union was regarded as the lesser Satan, since it was not seen as closely involved with the Iranian monarchy as the U.S. The most dramatic symbol of the revolutionary determination to assert independence was the seizure of the American embassy in Tehran in November 1979 by a number of students. Angered by the U.S. admission of Shah, they asked Washington to hand over the former despot, a request that was never met. Iran's relations with the Soviet Union and its allies were tense as well, although at a low intensity. Tehran was opposed to numerous Soviet international policies, particularly its invasion of Afghanistan. In 1988, Imam Khomeini sent a letter to then-Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev warning him of an immediate danger. That letter has gone down in history as insightful and prophetic, from the leader of an independent nation to a superpower.
If you hope at this juncture to solve the economic problems of socialism and communism by appealing to the centers of the Western capitalism, you will, far from remedying any ill of your society, commit a mistake which those to come will have to erase.
The post-revolution Iran has now consolidated itself regionally and globally, forming warm relations with independent countries across the board. With the disintegration of the Soviet Union, Iran also pursued a look to the East policy, engaging in close collaboration with Russia and China. The independent Iran is now being regarded as a power that has contributed a lot to make the West Asian region more stable and peaceful. One such instance is Iran's role in defeating Daesh terrorism in Iraq, Syria, and beyond. Undoubtedly, Iran's Islamic Revolution was one of the biggest social upheavals of the 20th century. Imam Khomeini's words still resonate, and his powerful ideas of liberation from imperialistic domination, independence in domestic and foreign affairs, as well as call for embracing social justice and harmony continue to inspire not only Iranians, but people in the region and beyond.
Israeli aircraft have carried out new strikes against the besieged Gaza Strip amid rising tensions over the regime's deadly crackdown in the occupied territories. Israeli missiles targeted several positions of the Palestinian resistance groups in the center and south of Gaza with missiles. The resistance groups responded by firing anti-aircraft missiles. They also fired rockets at the Israeli settlements near Gaza following which sirens went off in those settlements. Israel claims that the strike came in response to earlier rocket fire from Gaza. Tensions have been rising since Friday when the Israeli forces raided the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank, killing at least 9 people. The situation has raised concerns of a broader crackdown by Israel's new cabinet, which is seen as the most extremist in the regime's history. Our Gaza correspondent, Asher Shannon, joined us earlier with more details about the latest Israeli airstrikes against the besieged Gaza Strip.
The Israeli attacks targeted Hamas security installations around 2 a.m. This morning. The Israeli regime claims that the airstrikes were a retaliation for a rocket fire from the Gaza Strip. Palestinian resistance groups have reportedly fired rockets towards the occupied territories, at least 3 small homemade rockets towards the occupied territories of 1948. Sources say that the rockets were fired in retaliation to the Israeli forces' attack on female Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli jails over the last 48 hours, as well as the bad treatment of the entire prisoner population within Israeli jails and detention centers over the last days. Things are extremely tense as Israeli drones continue to fly over the skies of the Gaza Strip. And during the airstrikes, Al-Mujahideen movement fired at least one surface-to-air missile to at the incoming Israeli aircraft, as well as Hamas's Ezzedine Qassam brigades fired an anti-aircraft fire to deter the attack of the Israeli fighter jets, drones, and Apache helicopter gunships around 2 a.m., between 2 and 3 a.m. This morning.
Well, Ukraine has reported more casualties in the eastern Donbass region as Russia intensifies its attacks ahead of the first anniversary of its military operation there. The Ukrainian military says Russian forces have struck the city of Bakhmut in Donetsk province and at least 10 nearby towns and villages. Separately, Ukrainian police say Russian missile strikes on several apartment buildings in the eastern city of Kramatorsk have left 3 people dead and 20 others injured. President Volodymyr Zelensky says the situation has become tougher as Russia is seeking for more gains before February the 24th. That's the day when Russia began its offensive against Ukraine last year. Zelensky has already requested for new weapons and their fast deliveries from his Western backers. The European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen announces new enforcement measures at EU borders to control the movement of asylum seekers. Rights campaigners describe the bloc's refugee policy as racist and discriminatory. Jerome Hughes reports from Brussels.
The situation for refugees in and around the European Union is getting worse by the day. At a meeting of EU lawmakers in Brussels on Wednesday, it was announced tougher controls will be used on the border between EU member Bulgaria and non-member Turkey.
Like drones and radar and other means of surveillance. As we've done last year, for example, in the last years, for example, in Romania, we've done it in Spain and Greece and in Poland.
EU institutions and leaders are accused of breaking international law surrounding the protection of refugees.
What is the EU answer to these protection gaps? More walls, more drones, more returns, more funding to Libyan detention centres.
Campaigners say shunned refugees are fleeing countries destabilised by the West. At the same time, millions of Ukrainians are being welcomed here and given the same rights as EU citizens. Legislators are calling on EU leaders to provide safe, legal routes for refugees. The EU is currently developing a new asylum policy, but it's already shrouded in scepticism.
The Commission has to step up to break the cycle of mistrust existing between member states by enforcing also rules, also current rules.
Many EU nations are now struggling to accommodate the millions of Ukrainian refugees who have travelled here. Thousands more continue to arrive each day. Agencies across the EU that are already overwhelmed warn breaking point is being reached. They are demanding additional resources from governments. Jerome Hughes, the European Parliament, Brussels.
Americans are calling for an end to police brutalities as they mourn the killing of Tyre Nichols, an African-American man who was beaten to death by Memphis City Police.
You don't stand up to thugs in the street becoming thugs yourself. You don't fight gangs by becoming 5 armed men against an unarmed man.
We have to fight for justice. We cannot continue to let these people brutalize our kids.
We need to take some action because there should be no other child that should suffer the way my son and all the other parents here have lost their children.
People expressed their anger during the funeral of Nichols that was also attended by the U.S. Vice President. Kamala Harris said the act of violence by police was not in line with public safety, adding that people have lost confidence in law enforcement agencies and do not feel safe. Nichols was arrested by the police in early January for a traffic violation. He was viciously beaten by 5 officers at the scene and succumbed to his injuries 3 days later. The 5 policemen, who are also African-American, has since been fired by the Memphis Police Department and charged with second-degree murder. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Do stay tuned, though. Bye.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Supplication on Thursdays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who has taken away the shadowy night by His power and brought the sight-giving day through His mercy. He has clothed me in its brightness and given me its favor. O Allah, just as Thou hast spared me for this day, so also spare me for its likes. Bless the Prophet Muhammad and his household, and torment me not in it and in other nights and days by allowing me to commit unlawful acts and to clothe myself in sins. Provide me with its good, the good of all within it, and the good of everything after it, and turn away from me its evil, the evil of all within it, and the evil of everything after it. O Allah, by the protective compact of Islam, I seek mediation with Thee, and by the inviolability of the Quran, I rely upon Thee. By Muhammad, the Chosen, Allah bless him and his household, I seek intercession with Thee, so recognize my protective compact, by which I hope my need will be granted. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, decree for me on Thursday 5 things, which none embraces but Thy generosity, and none supports but Thy favors. Health through which I may have the strength to obey Thee. Worship by which I may deserve Thy plentiful reward. Plenty in my state through lawful provision. And that Thou makest me secure in the places of fear through Thy security. And placest me in Thy fortress against the striking of worries and sorrows. Bless Muhammad and his household. And make my seeking his mediation as an intercessor give profit on the day of resurrection. Surely, Thou art the most merciful of the merciful.
Islamic Revolution, Quran, Spirituality and Unity. In the name of God, Salam and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, these days mark the 44th anniversary of victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran. We are with you with the third episode of the special series on this occasion. In this episode, we are going to discuss the status of the Noble Quran, spirituality and unity among different strata of people in the triumph of the Islamic Revolution. Please stay with us. On February 11, 1979, the news of the victory of the Islamic Revolution in Iran topped news agencies in the world as the Iranian nation put an end to the 2,500 years of the rule of kings in the country with throwing the Pahlavi regime in the dustbin of history. There were several factors in the triumph of the greatest revolution of the past centuries. These factors toppled the dictatorial and mercenary regime of Mohammad Reza Shah, who enjoyed the support of all big powers and enemies of humanity, particularly the US. We had said earlier that Imam Khomeini's leadership was the main factor, as he possessed every characteristic of a divine leader. His leadership resulted in the unity of the whole Iranian nation in different phases and success of the revolution. Imam Khomeini would always stress unity and solidarity of all walks of life in the country and firmly opposed any cause of discord and disunity. People unanimously hated the despotic and corrupt regime and loved Islam wholeheartedly. Their slogans and stances of Imam Khomeini were all indicative of the fact that the historical uprising of this nation had its roots in Islam. Therefore, some 1.5 months after the victory of the Islamic Revolution, more than 98% of people in an unmatched referendum voted yes to the Islamic Republic system of government. This historically unique approach to the rule of an Islamic system evidently proved that, unlike all other movements and uprisings, Iran's revolution was an Islamic and a spiritual movement. In other words, the Islamic Revolution is based on Islamic values and goals. Imam Khomeini, God's mercy upon him, said, "Until there is not the will of God, the Exalted, it is impossible for human being to reach such a unity." Although the Iranian people have deep religious beliefs, the fact that caused them to accept these beliefs as the goal and ideal of struggles against the Shah were the guidelines of their great leader, Imam Khomeini. Being aware of people's love of religion and spirituality, the Imam called on them to get united around the inspiring and anti-oppression teachings of Islam. As it has been said earlier, he took Islam out of books and the shelves of libraries and brought it to the scene of society to tackle major problems of oppressed and deprived masses. Imam Khomeini started the main phase of this struggle against the British-installed and American-supported Shah in 1963. The Imam was so brave that he said, "On the night of arresting and sending me to Tehran, I was soothing the agents of regime in the car. By God, I was not frightened. It was they who were frightened. I told them, 'Do not fear, I am here.'" Imam Khomeini liberated Islam from isolation and made people familiar with the social and political teachings of this religion. God says in verse 7 of chapter Muhammad of the Noble Quran, "O you who have faith, if you help God, He will help you and make your feet steady." Imam Khomeini was the best epitome of this verse in the contemporary era, and he taught people how to fight with bare hands against a regime which enjoyed the backing of all big powers in the world. He put his trust in God, and people followed him as they found him the most honest and truthful person. Imam Khomeini directed people's sentiments toward the Ahlul Bayt of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, especially towards Imam Hussein, peace upon him, in the way of struggles against the illegal regime. He taught Muslims that they should not be silent and indifferent towards injustice imposed on their brethren. He told them that the Shah and his supporters, the US in particular, are the symbols of Yazid in the modern era. Thus, everyone should fight them to either overthrow them or sacrifice their blood in this way. When we speak of the Iranian people's following of Islamic teachings, we mean the values and laws that have been mentioned in the Quran and practiced by the Prophet and his infallible successors, blessings of God upon them. The Noble Quran, as the eternal miracle of the Prophet, was always hope-inspiring in tough junctures of the revolution. For instance, this great heavenly scripture says in verse 3 of chapter Ahzab, "And put your trust in God, and God suffices as trustee." Verse 30 of chapter Fussilat also reads, "Indeed, those who say our Lord is Allah, and then remain steadfast, the angels descend upon them, saying, do not fear, nor be grieved, and receive the good news of the paradise which you have been promised." Imam Khomeini, as the greatest leader of modern era and the practical interpreter of the Noble Quran, would always persuade people to follow the instructions of the Quran to achieve victory. He said, "We have a staged uprising so that Islam and the laws of Islam and the Quran rule in our country, and no law may not and will not be able to show itself against the law of Islam and the Quran." The main reason for enmity of the global arrogance and Zionism with the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini and whoever follows in his steps, is that they have shattered the bogus concept of separation of politics and religion. Imam Khomeini and the Iranian nation have proved to the world people that a true religion should be at the service of masses and downtrodden. Religion must be a nightmare for the US, the fake child-killer Israeli regime, and their surrogates and puppets. This is opposite to the concept of religion preached by court mullahs who justify the wrongdoings and injustices of oppressors and help them rule fearlessly.
IRIB English Radio.
visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
Superheroes and Beyond. Part 1.
In a hot night in the summer in the late 1930s, a teenage boy who had recently lost his father in a street fight saw a superhuman character in his dream who had replaced his father. Strong, smart, fast, and protector of security. A superhero that the crisis-stricken American society anxiously waited for so he'd rescue them from the economic problems and injustice of the 1930s.
Fights a never-ending battle for truth, justice, and the American way.
Not many people thought that the dream of a teenager would be so influential and leave such a huge impact on the future of a country. The Americans of the 1930s were challenged with social and economic problems, injustice, and crime. They needed a source of power who could put an end to their crises. A superhuman solution should have been found for the problems apparently no human being could solve. That was how Superman, the first superhero of comic stories, became the solution to the crisis. It was the DC company that released the red and blue clad man stories for the first time and started the narratives of a superhero. Superman fought against injustice in American society, corrupt officials and gangsters, and supported the oppressed and miserable people. He had strange and violent ways. No law or politician could stand in his way. He dealt with U.S. politicians and officials in the most violent ways and would fight corruption and injustice, which were the main factors behind economic stagnation. Iron Man turned into a panacea for the hopelessness in society and the sufferings in the governmental structure. Superman sought to restore hope and revive American society. The peace among the public would make the conditions better for the politicians to continue their policies. By selling 1.25 million copies of its book, The DC company made a hero for a society that lacked heroes and launched the era of the American superheroes. Superman's success in controlling public opinion encouraged DC to introduce another superhero named Batman. The difference was, Batman did not have any supernatural powers. A billionaire young man and reveler who fought with criminals to take revenge for his parents. He got his powers from extraneous exercises and using modern technologies. Unlike Superman, who had a godlike appearance, Batman looked like an ordinary man. He would build himself through training, cleverness, exercise, and gaining knowledge. The human aspect of Batman would assure the people who had no choice but to love superheroes that they don't need a savior from the outside and they could fight in the era of darkness and recession on their own by working hard. For ordinary people, the idea of becoming Batman was more real than becoming Superman. In the world of Batman, science and technology was like the real world, in a way that his tools and weapons could be made in the real world. Now, the U.S. was full of superheroes the companies who used to create superheroes had copied from the first two heroes. Superheroes who were sources of hope and culture for a desperate U.S. society. Second World War started. It was December 1940, a few months after the war had broken out. Another superhero became the symbol of American citizens, Captain America. He was the first American who got into a conflict with Hitler before the U.S. Army. Captain America was a thin young man who got an injection and turned into a bulky soldier whose primary goal was to destroy Hitler. Every day, American weapons would stoke tensions in the war in Europe, and the U.S. in return would reap a huge economic benefit from selling weapons to the country involved in the war. Japan's attack on Pearl Harbor in the United States served as an excuse to push the public to support Washington's engagement in the war. At that time, Captain America was quite helpful in setting the stage for the U.S. to get involved in the war. All American superheroes fought alongside the U.S. Army against the villain forces who had threatened America. When people had to accept restrictions caused by the war and give up many of their demands, the superheroes sought to change the situation in society. The pictorial advertisements emerged from comic books, and many posters were displayed with the aim of recruiting for the army, supporting the soldiers, buying stocks, and rationing goods. People who didn't allow the government to interfere in their lives the previous decade were now investing their savings for the war so the army could use the resources. On the other hand, after the male soldiers were deployed to the war, women were needed in important social activities. The government asked the women to do things that were considered masculine before the war. As the number of men dwindled, a different superhero stepped into the comic world, Wonder Woman. Wonder Woman encouraged women and girls to get into the world of men. Just like male superheroes, she would violently and fiercely fight with the Nazi or Japanese enemies. The game of superheroes worked. Superman tried to get enlisted in the army. Batman and Robin sold bonds for the war. As a result of the advertisement, $150 billion worth of bonds were sold during World War II. At that time, comic books were very popular among children and soldiers. In just 1 month, about 35,000 copies of Superman were delivered to U.S. military personnel throughout Europe. The war lasted for 5 years. No one thought a little boy and a fat man could end the war. The little boy and the fat man resemble the names of the characters in comic books. Simple and gentle names. But the names were chosen for the two bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. The comic superheroes should have adapted themselves to a world that possesses nuclear weapons. A world filled with fear, overshadowed by atomic bombs. The atomic bombs were so powerful that they astonished everyone on the planet. The superheroes were dwarfed by the power of the atomic bombs. It was a problem for the publishers of comic books. The conditions for publishers of comic books had changed. Superheroes' deeds had become cliché, and the sales of comic books had nosedived. That was when some news left the U.S. and the world in amazement. The Soviet Union had also made atomic bombs. The U.S. was no longer the sole possessor of destructive bombs any longer. Now the best stories of comic books were about atomic bombs and the battle against communism. For Americans, a nuclear threat was synonymous with communism, a big enemy that wanted to destroy U.S. society. U.S. government pocketed a huge wealth by selling weapons to other countries, changing tax laws during wartime, and selling bonds. Now, it only needed peace and quiet. The government that had become the post-war superpower now wanted to flash a dream image from the U.S. and display its power. The stories of Superman and Batman during the 1950s would advertise American lifestyle besides fighting communism. Both superheroes lived their normal lives with their families and even their pets, and unlike the previous two decades, when they fought with major powers, they pushed the importance of family, job, abiding by the law, and social norms. In the media in the decade, a typical American man was a stylish employee. He'd go home after work and enjoy being with his family. And a housewife, unlike the wartime, who was encouraged to work outside the home, would go shopping and make the house an ideal place. The superheroes rushed to the rescue of the government to help direct public opinion. Superman became an ordinary employee, and his stories and romantic relationship with his fiancée, Lois Lane, became central to the story more than anything else. The children were also at the center of the new lifestyle. Social welfare and economic stability led to the baby boom.
Jumping is every baby's idea of fun. And now you can get this jolly jumper, worth over $10, free for Ivory Snow box tops.
Genteel, used every day, gives more skin protection than your baby ever got with ordinary soap. So mild they won't sting baby's eyes like soap.
Say, who is your new friend? Why, it's Ideal Patty Play Pal and her big brother Peter Play Pal.
This is a story about diapers that started life exactly alike. One set of diapers was washed in Ivory Snow, the safest possible soap.
In a period of 20 years after propagating American values, about 78 million children were born during the baby boom. That generation always felt the shadow of a nuclear war. The baby boom generation had become teens who started their activities to take part in society and express their demands. As a generation grew up, the crime rates among the youth during the 60s rose. They lived during an economic boost and with grandfather's concerns. It was like that generation and their parents were born in two different countries and were in two different worlds. They voted for Kennedy as a young and handsome president. They loved the Beatles and gradually started hippie bands. The fear from the atomic bomb should have been turned into something normal for the baby boom generation. The American politicians knew very well it was necessary for managing the public opinion.
First, you duck, and then you cover. You may be in your schoolyard playing when the signal comes. That signal means to stop whatever you are doing and get to the nearest safe place fast. Always remember, the flash of an atomic bomb can come at any time, no matter where you may be. Sometimes the bomb might explode without any warning. Then the first thing we would know about it would be the flash. And that means duck and cover fast, wherever you are. There's no time to look around or wait. Be like Bert. When there is a flash, duck and cover, and do it fast.
Under those circumstances, another company that produced superhero stories, named Marvel, whose books were more popular among the youth, started its job. They stepped into the world of superheroes with Captain America. Thanks to their awesome scriptwriters, they overtook DC. Marvel was more popular among the people and had more lifelike heroes. During the Atomic War, it created new characters for the young generation in America. The comic superheroes stepped in once again. A group of four people were dispatched to the Earth's orbit for research. The group owed their strength to atomic power. The relationship between the four heroes was like a family. A sister and her brother, a friend from the university, and two romantic friends formed a strong bond. They were much more humane than all previous superheroes. And besides fighting the enemy, the Fantastic Four would mostly argue with each other and had to face their personal problems. And that would make the new generation readers feel closer to them. After the Fantastic Four and during the Atomic Crisis, Marvel introduced several other superheroes to the market. Hulk, a character who turns into a green monster due to atomic radiation. As he was repelled by society, he turned into a popular hero for the baby boom generation who felt alienated from their own identities. Marvel's other nuclear hero, and the most popular one during the period, was Spider-Man. Peter Parker, an introvert, thin teenage boy who was from a baby boom generation, turned into a hero with amazing powers after he was bitten by a nuclear radiation-infected spider.
In the limelight.
U.S. drug maker Pfizer has recently admitted that it engineered treatment-resistant variants of COVID-19 in order to test its antiviral medicine. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. U.S. drug maker Pfizer has recently admitted that it engineered treatment-resistant variants of COVID-19 in order to test its antiviral medicine. The admission partially backs up earlier claims by an executive with the company who told an undercover reporter that Pfizer was deliberately mutating the virus to preemptively develop new vaccines. In a statement posted on its website, Pfizer said that it has not conducted gain-of-function or directed evolution research, referring to the practice of amplifying a virus' ability to infect humans and the process of selecting desirable traits of a virus to reproduce, respectively. However, the pharma giant said that it combined the spike proteins of new virus variants with the original strain in order to test its vaccines, and that it created mutations of the virus to test Paxlovid, its antiviral drug. The company said, in a limited number of cases, such virus may be engineered to enable the assessment of antiviral activity in cells, adding that this work was carried out in a secure lab. The work also sought to create resistant strains of the virus, it added, describing a process commonly understood as being gain-of-function research. Pfizer's statement came 2 days after Jordan Tristan Wacker, an executive involved in the firm's mRNA division, told an undercover reporter that the company was exploring ways to mutate COVID ourselves so we could create preemptively developed new vaccines. Wacker said that scientists were considering infecting monkeys with the virus who would then keep infecting each other.